You're doing it again.
Doing what?
I know perfectly well you've been reaching out for him.
Merlaine flipped her fishing line to another spot.
Bad enough that Horace has to have these urges, but it's worse for you to go spying on him.
I'm just curious.
I know you are. But how would you like it if you and Glow were doing it?
We never have. You know that. We're waiting until we marry.
Yes, but you think about it a lot.
Now, how do you know that?
Oh!
Merlaine looked at Bubbles near her fishing line and telepathically warned the turtle off before it took the bait. Sometimes that little trick saved a bait stealer a minor bit of pain.
So you caught me. So I mind peek you now and then. What's that got to do with you invading Horace's privacy?
Charles frowned, staring at their fishing floats resting on the water.
All right, Merlaine, you've got me. I want to snoop to find out what Horace experiences. But there's a reason, besides the voyeurism.
Of course there is.
Horace might get in trouble. He's never been with wild dragons, never even seen one.
But he's got the opal in his gizzard. With that, he can pop away from trouble fast.
Right, but can we know? What if Elba and our parents and our grandparents are right? Maybe old Zadie really is alive. Maybe...
She'd hardly be in dragon territory.
We don't know that. Her head was never found, even using magic. Suppose she's there. Suppose Horace wanders onto her.
He'd destroy her and let us know.
Well, maybe, but...
Ugh! Fine, Charles. Go ahead and peek.
They had had this conversation for days now, with her first trying to convince Charles and then him trying to convince her. They had switched sides in the argument at least twice.
See what he's up to, then butt out.
Charles' face wrinkled as he concentrated.
Got him, Merlaine. He's enjoying a sensation. He's...
What, Charles? What?
He's eating something long, dead, with maggots on it.
Ugh! Merlaine watched her brother heaving, suffering one of the consequences of mind-peaking a dragon. She felt a little sorry that she had urged him into this, but only a little. After his own dinner was gone, Charles wiped his mouth and looked at her with a miserable, sick expression.
Ugh. From now on, Merlaine, if you want to snoop, go ahead. I'm fishing.
What do you think, Kildum?
I don't know, Kildee.
Kildum, titular head of Klinglin, spoke earnestly to his lookalike twin. Below their hiding place in the rocks on the hill, Glow stood disrobed and golden in the sun, her smooth young arms raised high, her swelled-out torso with its pink-tipped breasts. Her hands came together like mating birds, her blonde head lowered, and she dove into the creek. She slipped cleanly through the water. She disappeared among a widening ring of silvery ripples, then surfaced. She raised her head high on her slender neck and sucked in more air. Her head went back, all the way back, and she backstroked slowly through the water.
I think if I were Charles, I'd be here. Why should he not be, since he intends to marry her? I think Helba would turn him into a frug. Besides, he's done better than see her naked. You think?
Kilda could play at dumb idleness sometimes. Both knew perfectly well that the two were in love, and had more than an inkling of what that meant.
Of course. We know they swam together naked. We heard them laugh. We saw them go into the tall grass and the old abandoned house. But we don't know they did anything.
No.
But only because we're not telepaths. Kildum, do you think Glow knows we watch her?
If she does, she hasn't told Elba.
If Helba knew we watched, she'd probably strike us blind.
Really?
No. But you know Helba. Just because she's a witch and our guardian, she thinks she has to keep us from learning things.
But she always says we should learn. Book learning, yeah. Ruler wisdom and court protocol and all that junk. But looking at naked babes and actually doing it?
Yeah, I expect you're right. But someday we'll be grown enough.
Yeah.
Helba contemplated the healthy, lust-filled faces of the boy kings a moment longer, and then blanked the crystal. Helba reached absently across the table to stroke the head of her familiar.
They thought they were smart, shutting you in the pantry. We have to let them think that. Kinglets they may be, but someday they will rule without our help. Work, work, work. Mortals might work 50 years or so and then rest. True witch can easily work century after century.
To Kelvin and his father and his talented mother, the 20 years was as long an interval as they could possibly imagine. To Helba and to Zadie, her enemy of centuries, it was a coffee tea break in the middle of a work day. Katpa walked silently across the table and stopped with his front paws on the big open book. The book had scintillating letters on its pages that sparked at her, getting her attention.
Yes, Katpa, it is indeed time that I proceed with the magic. I'm afraid we'll all need its protection very soon.
Krasnose, resident wizard of Apple, worked his neck gills in increased agitation as a fish swam past his orc face. Fenobly, wife of Brutalus, their king, was frowning at the great yellow crystal in front of them. In the crystal, the human witch creature known as Helba was perusing a book of magic with her familiar, one black-as-black-can-be feline.
I don't know, your ladyship. She seems to be doing magic that you and I have long ago learned.
True enough. She is but a human witch, though longer lived than mortal humans. You and I, Krasnose, being orcs, have the superior art.
Quite true.
Krasnose raised his head crest and lowered it, mindful of the bit of current the fish had raised as it swam past. To not meet the king's wife, on the occasion of her concern, would have been dangerous, even for a resident wizard. Fenobly knew her art, though she softened it with an egg-layer's gentleness. Thus, she had seen fit to not destroy the enemy humans. Because of Fenobly and her soft ways, orcs did not totally own this frame and all within it. Because of her femininity and her power over Brutalus, the copper-scaled dragon Horus was acknowledged by them, as well as humans, as overking. True, orcs did govern orcs, and humans governed humans. Both orcs and humans pretended that the holder of the phrasing opal had the final say. To Krasnose, it was stupid, knowing that they could have had full control at the cost of the young dragon's life.
I see that she is concerned, resident wizard, and that she perhaps has cause.
How can you say that, Fenobly? We both have searched for the witch Zadie and found her not in existence.
Not in our existence, Krasnose. Perhaps in another.
If we still possessed the opal, we could search.
True. We may have to. But we do have the opal, though it's lodged in the Overking's gizzard.
You would want the human child known as Merlaine to search with the dragon?
She's no longer a child. Yes. I think that King Brutalus should now, on our combined advice, issue to her that request.
It will be honored, Fenobly.
It will be. Even if they believe the danger long past, the humans dare not break the alliance.
Lest we destroy them?
That, resident wizard, is but Opal's possibility of last resort.
Yet we were allies of this Zadie creature.
Not really, Krasnose. She used us, orcs and humans. She would have had us destroy each other.
The humans would not have lasted.
With the hero they have, perhaps they would have. At least long enough to have ruined Apol.
Krasnose rubbed at the scales on his forehead where he had lately discovered a colony of water lice. He knew she was right, as royalty always had to be. He knew also that if the opportunity came, he would back the witch Zadie over the humans. 20 years it might have been, but Krasnose still smarted from the insult the round ears Tads had done Apple. Single-handed, using only magic, they had snatched the priceless opal from its resting place, pulled down an ancient landmark, wrecked an undersea prison, and, in effect, flirted their impudent tails. Deep down in his predatory heart, Krasnose resented what those human Tads had done and vowed that someday, should the opportunity arise, he'd demonstrate to them the power of orc magic. Glint strove to reach out his thoughts to the copper-scaled dragon. So soon after the dragonberry trip, it was difficult. Through Ember's dragon eyes, he had watched the copper-scaled young male on his ramblings. Now, the stranger was almost to his cave, and he would keep his word to Ember and try to think to him.
Ember, I'll mind talk to the stranger if he'll let me. Watch over me.
Glint walked out of the cave and patted his sister on the neck.
I want up on your back, Ember.
Why?
To carry me to the stranger. I want him to see me before I mind talk to him. I want him to see me on your back.
Glint knew that this was strange behavior on her part, but for all his centuries, most spent in a dream state as a sword, he hadn't learned to understand females. He climbed on top of Ember and held her small, otherwise unused wings in his hands and sat down on the hard, interlaced golden scales. Kings had never had a throne to equal it. Ember stood up, lifting him as easily as though he were a bird. She had a formidable strength that he knew he would never have, which was why he utilized it. There was nothing he knew of that could stand up to the strength of a dragon, except another dragon.
Sister, what's the matter with you? That's no way to act. The stranger will think you unfriendly.
Beat the copper. That's the opposite of a mating thought.
Yet Glint had been certain that Ember wanted a mate. Before she took the berry, it had seemed all that she could think about. Dragons, especially the females, were a total mystery. The strange dragon had not seen them. Like most dragons, its eyesight probably was not of the best. Glint reached into its mind.
Claw hurts. Rock bruise. What got into that big female? She wanted to mate. Then she whacked me with her tail. Then she drove me off. Then she mated with my rival. Strange beings are females.
I'm with you, friend.
Glint mind-talked before he could stop himself. That wasn't what he had planned to say.
Charles? No, not Charles. Charles is human. Charles's brother. Merlane's sister. Human, both.
A dragon with human siblings?
Possibly no stranger than having been a sword.
I am Glint. I am human. I have a dragon sister.
Does your sister have a mate?
No.
Then I will mate with her.
Possibly, whoever you are. Why are you copper?
Chimera's hatching help. There were three of us. Charles, Merlane, and me. Should have been one body, with three heads. Should have been a chimera. Mother would die, and father not one. The chimera helped us. Charles and Merlane named me Horus.
And it was, though Glint didn't understand it. Dimly, Glint knew that once he had had a sister, so possibly once he had had a dragon sibling as well.
Glad to meet you, Horus. Horus, you must be gentle with my sister. I named her Ember because she's warm. She's young and inexperienced with males. She knows me, her brother, better than any dragon other than her mother.
Horus began running. Wriggling from side to side in typical dragon or lizard fashion, he forgot his hurt claw and recent rejection. He wanted to meet Ember, but strangely, his thoughts were of gazing on her and daintily touching his forked tongue to hers rather than actual mating. Glint felt that this was right, but it hardly fitted what he knew about dragons. Ember trembled for her full length on both sides. Glint almost lost his hold.
Easy, Ember. He just wants to talk, to get to know you. He's like me. He can mind talk.
Ember halted, warily eyeing the approaching stranger. The male dragon really did have copper scales. It hadn't just been an illusion of light.
Ember, I am Horus. I have traveled far to mate with you and make eggs. Throw your brother and ready yourself.
Bad male.
Ember's insult coincided with a vicious tail slap. Glint hung to her wing stubs, more frightened than he had been at any time before riding her back. Always before, he had mind-guided her, as he had when they were hatchlings. Today, he had elected to let her follow her own will without imposing his. To him, it seemed the decent process for mating. Horus clutched his bloodied snout with his foreclaws. Big tears rolled from his eyes and splashed down on the ground.
That hurt.
Of course it did, Copper. No biting, no battle, just squat down and you'll climb aboard.
But that's what dragons do, isn't it?
Not this dragon.
Glint felt Horace's injured feelings so intensely that he wilted under them. He tried to transfer what he sensed to Ember, wanting her to know the copper-clad dragon as a sensitive mate-seeker rather than a crude, rude aggressor.
Easy, Ember. You're discouraging him.
Mind your own business, Glint.
Ember, I'm trying to help you.
Out!
She was giving him no choice. She seemed as angry as a jaybird fluffing its feathers and preparing to defend its nest. With great difficulty, Glint resolved to keep his mind shut. Ember knew what was right because he had taught her. To grab her mind like the mind of a squirbit or other prey would be ungentlemanly and inappropriate.
Ember, I thought we could be friends.
We will be if I want us to be, after we get to know each other.
Right. After we share some good rancid flesh, lap some blood, touch our tongues, rub our tails, then...
Only if I want to.
Of course.
The romance was getting off to a shaky start. Glint had been afraid it was finished with Ember's tail slap. Now, all he wanted was to get out of their way and let them proceed or not, as was their inclination.
Ember, can you let me off at the cave?
Yes.
Glint rode his sister the few steps back with Horace following. He eyed the copper dragon, decided that it wasn't going to surprise Ember and him by eating him, and slid off. He landed on his feet and, without looking back, entered the cave. Horace was not at all certain that he liked this dragon. She had at least one very peculiar friend, not a brother, he felt certain, though the mind talk had suggested it. Most likely, this was an intruder, which was what most humans were in the existence of dragons. This new dragon was strange. Not as intelligent as he, no, but every bit as determined. If she wanted mating, she would encourage him. If she didn't, she wouldn't. In her nature, then, she was not much different from him. The spring before them was sparkling clear, reflected in the water, along with the drooping tree limbs festooned with leaves, tall yellow-stalked weeds, and bushes heavy with red and yellow fruits. Two perfect dragon faces. She, golden and shining. He, copper and dirty now from the mud he had been in. What a pair they would make. How Horace would enjoy clutching her with his claws, his long tail scale by scale with hers. Horace blinked as the water rippled away in all directions. He saw that Ember's tail was raised, quivering, as if she was about to slap. Two could play at that. Horace raised his own tail, pivoted away from her, and brought it up fast and hard. His tail struck hers with a stinging shock. Ember stopped her downward tail whip, her tail held back by his.
Bad copper!
Ember stood up in the water on her hind legs, suddenly so quickly that it caught him unprepared. She pivoted on her left hind foot and grabbed him with both front legs around the throat. Ember extended her claws and ripped at his back and hooked into his wings. A moment later, Horace was flipped and she was leaning on him, holding him down.
Let me up!
Copper should have thought of that before.
The forefront of her body pressed down on his head, forcing his face against hard rocks that dented into his scales. This was no way to treat a future mate. He braced his forefeet against rock, bunched his muscles, and shot his head upwards. His hind feet pushed down and his leg muscles contracted. He lifted her on his head. Then, angrily, he threw her down. Horace threw his weight against hers as they changed places. As Horace struggled to hold Ember down, he looked into her eyes, darted his tongue out. Her eyes followed its tip.
I don't really want to hurt you, Ember. That wouldn't be right. Merlaine, my sister, would tell me it can't be right.
She strained against him. Her jaws parted, and hastily he moved his tongue back, not wanting it bit. Suddenly, her tongue was out, touching his, twining with it.
Oh, Horace, what kind of a dragon are you, anyway? A good dragon, I hope.
A dragon with a sister and brother.
A human sister and brother?
Yes, and your brother, too, is human. Doesn't he want you to be good?
You're supposed to take me, overpower me with your strength, subdue me. Dragons don't question.
We do.
Yes.
It's our siblings' fault. They misfitted us. Merlaine polished my scales. Charles brought me game. Sometimes it was as if the three of us were one.
Glint fed me mere guts. Glint rubbed plant sap on my baby hurts. Sometimes it was as if Glint and I were from one egg.
Do we have to battle more?
No, Horace. We feel human, though we're dragons. It is enough.
It was enough. The two dragons plunged together into the pool, well beneath the surface. Here, where the water was renewed even in the time of winter, it was the coldest. Here, they came together without pause for breath. Helba searched with her magic crystals. First the outhouse, then the swimming pool, then the secret hiding places she wasn't supposed to know about.
No sign of the Kinglings. No evidence that they or their nursemaid Glow have even been about. Oversleep one morning and everybody's missing.
Katba arched his shiny black back and stared her full in the face. It was as though the animal was suggesting something. Helba felt a chill.
Zadie, she must have... It wasn't natural, my sleeping so late.
Zadie had affected Helba's sleep and could as easily have slain them. But to have overcome Helba's defense magic would have meant even more power than Helba had attributed to the evil witch. Suddenly, her crystals, all four of them, blinked a rosy shade of pink. Zadie's hated face appeared, wrinkled and hideous as ever, on every one.
Satisfied, Helba? Satisfied they're not here?
Bag of bones!
Oh, my, no. Not at all, my dear. Take a look, Helba. Take a look at what you have done for me.
On all four crystals, a woman's lush, young body with spectacular ripe curves appeared. It was beautiful and would have been arousing to any male except for one astounding fact. From the neck up, it was the old Zadie with all her hairy warts.
What do you want?
Why, dearie, I've returned to thank you.
You're welcome. I'm always glad to help your body separate from your head.
Very funny. Perhaps you'll be interested in this.
Her arms gestured in the crystals, and in place of herself were the images of two young men and a young woman crouched on a narrow ledge. Below the ledge, egox flew a magic pattern back and forth, while beneath the egox, talons were clouds and a sheer drop into a dark and forbidding crevice.
You have them.
Illusions were one thing, but Helba knew this was no illusion.
Yes!
What do you want?
Control.
Over what?
Everything this frame holds. Tell your darling princelings they must abdicate. I will be your ruler from now on.
You're 20 years behind the times, Zadie. Kildim and Kildy aren't the big rulers.
No? Then who is?
Horace. After your defeat, the human and orc kingdoms united and placed a member of a third race in nominal command. Horace has the say over all the kingdoms, with the exception of Throod and Rotternik.
Horace the reptile? Ridiculous! Where is he?
Where he wants to be, of course. If he doesn't want you to find him, you won't.
Still has the Oberyn, does he? I'd have thought an orc would have gutted him for that by now.
You don't know orcs, dragons, or humans. As a matter of fact, you don't even know witches, except for the few you command.
Where's your Horace?
Why, Zadie, you have to search. If you find him, you'd better be polite. He's all grown up now, and he's fond of politeness. I'd be careful for the welfare of his subjects if I were you. Take care that no harm comes to Kildim and Kildy or their nursemaid.
You're an infuriating witch!
I always knew you thought so. Thank you. I relish that respect.
Respect? For you, I have no respect.
You should have, Zadie. It was I who defeated you.
You and a great many others. Besides, that was but a skirmish. The real war is coming, and this time, I will destroy you.
Oh, of course you will, Zadie. At least you will try.
The imaged Zadies raised right hands and snapped fingers. Instantly, the four pinkish crystals glowed blood red. Helba raised a hand and gestured an invisible wall of impenetrability between her and the crystals. The crystals imploded. Helba stroked an angry Katba, smoothing his fur.
Yes, Katba, yes. It will take all the art I can muster. I just hope that art will be sufficient. If Zadie ever wins, she will win all. No enemy then will she allow to live unrepentant.
Glow shivered on the ledge, feeling the fear of the two kinglets. They were all three terrified by the height, fearful of what their captor planned for them.
Kill them? I never thought I'd say this, but I wish we had that book again.
That stupid brother!
I suppose you'd like to call up that big bird again.
Yeah, it got us to Opal.
It also got us into danger, as you know who had planned. If Charles hadn't controlled it, it would have eaten all of us.
Boys, boys! This isn't getting us anywhere.
We're going somewhere. Do you suggest down or up?
Glow looked off the ledge at the Egox flying their magical patterns, then peered down into the depths. Even with Kelvin's very special boots, courtesy of Muvar, it was a long way down.
I do know something we can try.
What?
I can try to think to Charles and Merlane. If I can mind talk to them and tell them what's happened, maybe they can help.
We don't know where they are or where we are. Besides, help how?
With Helba, maybe. With Kelvin, perhaps. Maybe Charles.
You're dreaming.
I am not. I've had a lot of experience with dreaming, and this is no dream. Now, if you'll both shut up, I have to concentrate.
Glint was tasting a particularly tangy appleberry, which he decided had been picked a little green, when the head buzzing started.
Who? A woman? Female? Mind alike? Sister! My sister Glow! Zadie made us both forget, but when Glow's enchantment was broken, mine must have been also.
That was what had happened, and the memories flooded back to Glint all in a rush. His sister, small and pink and cuddly like him, learning to walk, learning to play, taken from their mother, transmuted into swords. Cruel separation, the work of an evil witch to punish their mother. His sister was mind-searching, reaching out to him.
Sister!
Who? What?
Your brother, Glint. Remember?
A whirr of thoughts went through Glint's mind. He saw her thoughts. Boy and girl twins not related to them. Red-haired, growing-up king twins, also unrelated. Fight on a mountaintop. Switch of sword. Long fall. Zadie's head and talons of Egok. So much, so very much. Yet Glint got it. He knew what Glow knew, and she knew all that was him.
Zadie's got you again.
Yes! The evil old witch! Help! Please help us.
I will, if I can.
Glint did not want to become a sword again. Neither would he abandon his long-lost sister.
I don't know where we are. It's high, it's a mountain, but I can't tell where.
Glint looked through Glow's eyes. He saw Egox flying, a great chasm, dragon territory. Glint remembered and shared the memory with Glow of seeing the Egox flying, how he had followed them and seen a beautiful woman from afar. An Egok had brought her meat. When the woman had turned in the light, her wrinkled face bloody, he had seen her clearly. He knew it was Zadie. Glint had blocked his thoughts long ago, afraid.
You saw her! You knew she was here, Glint?
Yes.
Why didn't you destroy her when you had the chance?
I was afraid of her. Once I knew it was her, I never went near the nesting site again.
Glint, can you help me now?
I can try. I know where she has you. It's a long way from here.
Glint, get Horus. Horus can carry you. Horus has the opal. He can bring you directly here. Hurry, Glint, hurry before she returns.
Kelvin stood admiring his newly bulging arm and leg muscles and flat stomach in the reflection in the clear river water. Except for a bit thinner hair and a reasonably matured face, he was almost the Kelvin who tried to fight against orcs and ended up slicing off Witch Zadie's ugly head. Those had been the days.
Kelvin, you preening turcock.
Lester had been watching him, a hint of disapproval on his face instead of his fishing bobber. Now as he spoke, Atras took that opportunity to snatch the bait and run with the line, propelling Lester upright.
Ooh!
That's a big one, Dad!
As usual, Kathy John had been the one to come along while her brothers begged their way out of the fishing trip. She was in mannish clothing, as usual, brown berry shirt and shorts. She avoided feminine apparel whenever possible.
Don't get your line tangled with hers! Give him line! He'll break your...
Lester's ramblu pole bent double as he heaved on it. A dark shadow moved up from the depths, a trass of near record size.
Lester, you're putting too much strain on the rod!
The broken half of Lester's pole made a wake as the trass swam away with it.
Damn! It's your fault, Kelvin. You and your advice.
Don't blame me. You're the one who put the pressure on.
I'll get him, Dad!
Water splashed shockingly cold on Kelvin's sweaty face and his new clothes. He rubbed his eyes and saw a pair of pretty, slim, well-browned legs dipping below the river's surface.
Lester, she'll drown.
Not Kathy. Get him, gal! Ha-ha! She's got hold of the line! Oh, the fish darted right past her!
Kathy John surfaced. Her face was very red, and the broken half of Lester's pole she raised was attached to a line wrapped around her neck. She hung on to the line with both hands. For a moment, the contest was in doubt, and then Kathy was struggling upright in the shallows. She shoved one hand in the fish's gills while grabbing its flapping tail with the other.
I've got him, Dad! I've got him!
Don't drop him, Kathy! Hang on! I'm coming!
Kelvin watched it all. Father and daughter subduing one large, ornery fish that would bake up well in John's brick oven. There'd be a family feast from this one, and he and Helen would surely be invited. He could almost taste the succulent white flesh steaming and mouth-wateringly fragrant in a delicately browned skin. Lester, in the meantime, had his arms around fish and daughter. Together they struggled ashore, though the flopping fish was not cooperative. Eventually, a muddy, bloody-handed Lester broke out of the brush and all but shoved the big-mouthed trass in Kelvin's face.
What do you think of that, hero? What do you think?
Nice fish.
Nice! Oh, it's beautiful. Prettiest fish I ever saw. We're taking it right to the fishodermist.
What? You're not gonna eat it?
No, of course not. We'll have it mounted and displayed in Lomax's place, and that way Kathy can show it to her grandchildren.
Daddy, you know I'm not going to marry.
You say that now, but someday you'll find a young man every bit as good as your old man. Your mother did.
Oh, Daddy, you...
Come on now. We want to get to the shop while it's open. You coming, Kel?
No thanks, Lester. I'll see if I can catch something for Helen to clean.
Good. Catch one big enough, and we'll all invite ourselves to supper.
Kelvin watched the happy father and daughter squish and splash back to the road carrying their prize. Thoroughly muddied, thoroughly soaked, he knew that neither had ever had a better time fishing. He envied them the fun and mourned the loss of a gluttonous evening, but maybe he might yet catch one himself. Suddenly, his float bobbed under and stayed. Kelvin yanked on the pole, then rapidly sent coils of line to its darting tip, giving the fish more to pull under, unlooping the line from the base knobs as rapidly as he could. Still, the steadily moving fish was faster. If only he had the magic gauntlets on today, then he might have a chance. Standing in the water nude, red-haired, curvaceous, and beautiful, was no fish. It pointed the pink tips of its full breasts at Kelvin, puckered its cherry mouth at him with half a kiss, dimpled prettily in both rosy cheeks, and said,
Kelvin, heroic mortal, we meet again. Last time was at the witches' convention, and then afterwards, briefly, on a mountaintop. You weren't nice to me there. In fact, you cut off my head.
Zadie!
Kelvin wanted to run, but his knees had grown weak. All he could do was stand there by the river as his delectable fish splashed with all her nude beauty to the shore.
Zadie,
You knew I'd be back, sweet boy. You did me a big favor. Now I'm not only young again, I'm perfect. I'm sorry for the things I did that caused you to seek to destroy me. I know you're the hero of prophecy, the round ear. I know that prophecy has to be serviced.
Kelvin could think of only one meaning for the word, serviced. Yet he had no use of that kind for any woman other than Helen, his wife, the mother of his children. Never had, never could. But Sadie was so beautiful. And she was coming from the water, little rivulets running down her perfect body. He wanted so badly to grasp her, to clasp her, to do what his body was urging him to.
What is this, a spell? I have to break it. If I don't, she'll destroy me.
What could he do? He hadn't his Muvar gauntlets or even a sword.
We must ally, Kelvin, you and I. I will prove my worth to you. First, we must make love.
But I...
Kelvin started, shocked despite, or perhaps because of, his sudden desire to do just that.
Why not? There's no one to see. Love is much better than fighting. The staff, as magical folk keep saying, is better than the sword.
Sadie was almost to him now, her arms held out invitingly. Her face was not an old face, nor an ugly one. She was beautiful and desirable beyond description. Kelvin thought she had to be an illusion, a projection of the old witch. But she had said that she had changed, and her hand touched his. It was real and warm. Her full red lips parted. Her eyes, so greenish, so filled with peaceful depths, grew large and near. Tiny golden comets filled the sea-green pools into which he was gazing. She raised herself on her toes. Her lips would soon touch his.
Daddy!
His daughter's voice came from up the path his fellow fishers had taken. For some reason, Merlane had come here.
Bother! I will return. Get rid of her. Send her home.
The beautiful face and body vanished. Kelvin felt just the brush of an invisibility cloak, and then he was alone on the riverbank. Merlane was running to him on the path.
Daddy, something's happened. It may be Zadie. The Twin Kings have vanished and glow with them. Helba's viewing crystals have all imploded and she's frantic. She wants you at the palace.
I'll come straight away.
Kelvin began gathering up his fishing gear, trying to piece together what he had just been through.
Was that a dream? It felt so real. But what if it really was Zadie? And what if she really has changed?
Later in the day, Kelvin heard all from Helba firsthand about the missing young people and Zadie's appearance in the crystals.
You'll have to do your hero stuff now, Kelvin. Fulfill Muvar's prophecy.
Yes, but suppose it's not what we thought. Suppose Zadie's changed. Suppose that now she's not evil, maybe even good?
Impossible. She's what she's always been. A lepoir doesn't change its splotches.
Kelvin didn't try to tell her differently. He watched her get her magical books and paraphernalia assembled. While she was occupied, he took a stroll to the pool where the kings and their nursemaid were supposed to have been. He looked down into the water. It rippled. And again, he saw Zadie's face.
Zadie, you took them, didn't you?
Yes, Kelvin. The words were as real as the rest of it.
You will harm them?
No, never. Helba was my enemy. She's not now, but don't tell her.
Zadie, can you return them?
I can.
You will?
To please you. If I do, you will have to help me help you fulfill your prophecy.
If you have no evil intent.
Done, then.
Zadie gestured and disappeared in a swirl of underwater smoke. As the pool water again became placid, Kelvin had to reflect on her last words. The witch had spoken with an inflection of triumph. Zadie watched Kelvin's image in the pool.
Oh, I have not yet begun to toy with you, my innocent dunce. Now I have planted the seed, and it will sprout and grow even in my absence.
subtly at first, so you think it is your own. Oh, how you will pay, idiot hero!
She's been standing like that for a long time. You think she's reached Charles?
Charles must be a long way off. I can't see how she can.
Maybe Horus.
Horus? You're out of your mind!
But she said he was in dragon territory. This could be dragon territory. It's rough enough.
So is Rotternik. You don't know where we are any more than I do.
Do too!
Do not!
Both red-haired kinglets turned an unroyal white and turned to see Dragon Horus occupying the ledge with them. Astride Horus's thick neck, holding his vestigial wings, sat a large bronzed man neither of them had ever seen. As they stared, he swung a leg over the side of the dragon and slid down.
Glow! Is it really you?
Glint!
Glow leaped into the stranger's waiting arms. The two young people hugged each other, moaning and rubbing the sides of their faces together.
Charles isn't going to like this.
He's her kin, stupid.
Can't be. Glow was a sword. Look at his hair.
Kildum did and was shocked. Both touching heads were so yellow they appeared to be bathed in bright sunlight. Moreover, both faces were similarly beautifully shaped. If they were not brother and sister, they certainly appeared to be.
Kildum, Kildee, meet my long-lost brother Glint. He mind talks too. I reached him, and he had already reached Horus. So if Horus can take the four of us, we'll go home together. If you royals are ready to travel.
Kildum looked at Kildee.
Hey!
Then hastily pushed his brother aside in his rush to get the top best seat on Horus. Kildum pulled himself up by a wing stub and got his legs astride the big head. In a moment, Kildee had hold of his belt. Then Glint helped Glow behind Kildee, and she clasped Kildee's middle. Glint settled himself between the wings and then aligned his smooth, bronzed calves to either side of them. They were ready to return to the twin palaces of Klingland and Kanz. Kelvin ducked, blinked, and rubbed water from his eyes with a quick wipe of his forearm. There in the pool was his most unusual offspring, Horus. Astride the dragon, with a missing royalty with their nursemaid, and with them, seated comfortably on the wing seat, was a tall, bronzed stranger. Kelvin hadn't expected that Zadie would make good on his request so quickly.
Kelvin, this is my long-lost brother Glint. We met in dragon territory and got Horus to bring us home. I don't know how the kings and I got to be in dragon territory, though. Maybe Helba can tell us? Helba!
The summoned witch stepped out of her war quarters and stared at them. She stared at them, and her aged face grew a worried expression.
This is my brother Glint, Helba. Do you know what happened to us? Kildum and Kildee and I didn't wake up this morning in our beds. Instead, we were on this cliff together in dragon territory. I don't know how it happened, Helba, and neither did they. Did you use some magic on us? Was that why we were there, so that Glint and I could find one another?
Helba walked slowly to the pool. Her charges and the nursemaid joined Kelvin, and her and then Horus vanished.
Horus is going back to his love. It's so romantic, they're finding each other. He'll come home sometime, bringing her with him.
Kelvin wondered what Horus's bride could possibly be like. Most married men claimed they had a dragon for a mother-in-law, but he had a dragon for a son, and now probably a dragon for a daughter-in-law, too.
Zadie's responsible for your adventure. She took you to the cliff and left you, then allowed you to come home.
Why?
I'm not certain, Precious. I can't imagine what the old nasty had in mind.
Maybe she did it so that Glow and Glint could find each other.
They all looked at him as though he were mad.
I mean, she was responsible for their enchantment. Maybe she's changed. Growing a new body, that had to be a lot like getting a new chance. Maybe she wants to make up for what she did.
Helba came over to him and felt his forehead with her gnarled hand.
Oh, Kelvin, you've been out in the sun too long.
Maybe. I was fishing, and Lester and Kathy John caught a big one. So they...
Another time, Kelvin. We haven't time to hear of your sporting exploits. This is serious.
But...
Helba made a motion, and it was as though Kelvin's lips were sealed.
As I was saying, Zadie doesn't just do things. She always has a reason, and the reason's always malignant. Did any of you actually see her?
Kildim and Kildee shook their heads. Glow frowned a little as though trying to remember. The stranger, Glint, spoke up.
I saw her once in dragon territory. Once after I became human again and not a sword. When Glow became human, I became human.
When did you see her, and exactly where?
When she was growing a new body, atop one of the really tall spires surrounded by mountain walls on three sides. She had Egox and Buzzvols caring for her. The Egox sheltered and protected her, and the Buzzvols fed her.
Oh, that's Zadie, all right. Did you think of attacking her? Destroying her while she was helpless? You should have done something.
I was afraid.
Of course you were. Anyone with sense would have been. But if you had left dragon territory to come to me...
I wasn't in mind contact. I didn't know Glow was alive. Besides, there was my sister.
Sister? Isn't Glow your sister?
Ember, my dragon sister.
Well, that explains it. You were thinking as a dragon does. Dragons aren't normally concerned with humans, except for eating them.
If I had more experience with humans...
Oh, we all make mistakes. Even I've made a few.
That's the truth.
Kelvin didn't mean to project this thought, but he realized that Glint was looking at him.
Really, Kelvin? What were they?
She could have been friends with Zadie. She could have helped and advised Zadie's niece, Zoanna, instead of burning her. She could have had her Brat King surrender to Kelvinia instead of forcing me to surrender.
Kelvin wondered at this last thought. He hadn't had to surrender.
Kelvin, that's serious.
Well, you'd better believe it, Sword Boy.
The thought, Kelvin realized, was as little his own as it was Glint's. But Glint seemed not to notice this. It was as though he only casually touched Kelvin's mind, fearful of intruding on privacies.
Maybe we can discuss this later. Away from Helba?
Yes, away from her. Don't let her know about this conversation.
Kelvin felt a momentary vacancy in his head.
What was I thinking?
Glint was looking back at Helba, squaring his shoulders, like a good private in the presence of a superior officer.
Oh, for pity's sake, Glint, I'm not going to belabor the obvious. Your mother was a powerful witch, but she taught you and Glow little before your enchantments.
I'm not aware of much before the enchantment.
Glow isn't either. It's called enchantment amnesia. The ability to forget is all that makes the state of enchantment bearable. And take it from me, it was Zadie's evil doings at the start. I should have opposed her more, but I was young, inexperienced.
She isn't that experienced today, either.
Kelvin's projected thought was totally unexpected to him, as it was to Glint, its recipient. Kelvin saw Glint's jaw tighten, and he knew that the thought that he hadn't wanted to project had gotten to him.
I've a lot to learn about things, Helba. Both I and my sister.
Of course you have, dear.
Helba patted the big, bronzed shoulder in friendly, grandmotherly fashion. She turned to the boys.
Kildim, Kildee, just because you went on a journey doesn't mean you get out of taking lessons.
No, ma'am. No, Helba.
Both you boys get your books. And Glow, you see that they study.
I will, Helba.
And I'll get to work with my magic and try to discover something. Once I get a crystal that's good for communicating, I'll confer with my orc colleagues. Then maybe I'll get somewhere.
Kelvin, let's you and I go somewhere and talk.
Oh, almost forgot. Kelvin, here.
Helba snapped her fingers. Kelvin's teeth unclenched and his jaw dropped free of her spell.
Thanks, Helba.
As soon as they had left the twin palaces behind, Glint turned to Kelvin in the back of the royal coach and nodded to the front and their chauffeur.
Can he mind talk, Kelvin?
No, and I don't think he can hear us up there either.
It seemed a safe guess. The old man had shown signs of deafness and would have no reason to be acting as Helba's spy.
I really don't know much of my early childhood, nor does Glow. I know what she knows because we shared. That's the way it is with mind talkers.
There can't be many of you. You and Glow are the only ones I've met, though there may have been some at the witches' convention. I believe we met all kinds of benevolent witches and warlocks and assorted in-betweens. But with the exception of Helba, none of us were witches, we...
Your children mind talk, Kelvin. Glow knows. She'll marry your son. I'll marry your daughter.
Oh. Ah.
Mind talkers could get right to the point. Kelvin hadn't even thought about Charles, Merlane, and Horace, but obviously Glint had, especially Merlane.
I realize I haven't met her, but that's all right. I'll be mind-talking to her before we reach her cottage.
Yes, I suppose you will.
Glint seemed sure of himself, but mind-talkers, Kelvin supposed, had a right to be.
Fortunately, my children, unusual as they are, have always had sense. From the time long ago at the convention, when they had the wit to steal what they needed and wanted.
Wait.
Approve of their stealing? I was ready to disown them.
Mr. Hackleberry?
What? Oh, sorry. I was thinking about the past. About when Merlane was little.
I know all that Glow knows. Merlane and Charles were naughty at age 6. It wasn't their fault. They were under the spells and influence.
Yes. Talk about Helba. Tell me what you know about Helba.
Helba? All right. I know what Glow knows of her. Glow knows only that she's snappish and bossy, but has been kind. I was wondering about your thoughts back at the palaces.
Kelvin wanted to say that Helba was a truly good friend, but somehow an inner vision of a beautiful woman's naked body glistening with translucent drops of water stilled his mouth, and he feared that to Glint he appeared unusually stupid.
At the palace, you said, she isn't that experienced today either.
Thought. I thought it. I didn't intend to project it.
But you did think it to me. You must have thought hard.
She made me angry, sealing my mouth with her magic.
Yes, I understand. What was it you wanted to say?
I don't know.
You said with your thoughts that Helba could have been friends with Zadie. That she could have helped Zoanna, once wed to your father, instead of burning her. That she could have had the twins surrender to you instead of you to them.
True enough.
Strangely, he felt that it was. Though, in another way, it was confusing.
I really don't understand that. From what Glow knows about it, Zadie was not to be reasoned with. She destroyed our mother and turned us into swords.
Neither you nor I nor Glow know that she couldn't have been reasoned with. On that, we have only Helba's word.
Kelvin, I don't understand. You really think?
You have to reconsider all the possibilities. Zadie may have changed.
Why? Because she let us escape with Horace's help?
Well, she didn't try to stop you, did she? For that matter, you don't know how Glow and the kings got there.
It has to be magic. They just woke up there on the cliff.
Magic, but not necessarily Zadie's. She's not the only witch in all the existences, you know.
If not her, then who?
Possibly Helba. Making a case for herself. She wants everyone to think Zadie's coming back to destroy us. Let me tell you, I think she's wrong.
Why do you think that?
I'll show you. Chauffeur? Chauffeur!
The coach slowed as the chauffeur pulled on the reins.
Did you say something, sir?
I don't want to go directly home. Drive me to the footpath that leads to the river.
Kelvin, I've got her. Merlane and I are talking to each other. Glow reached her just as she promised she would. Whatever it is you have to show me, can't it wait?
Oh, trust that brat to mess things up. I suppose it can. Cancel the order, driver.
Yeah!
The chauffeur drove on at a leisurely pace. Glint had a happy expression on his youthful face as he and Kelvin's daughter mind-talked.
Huh. What was it that I wanted to show Glint? I had something, someone in mind.
Then, as had been happening lately, what Kelvin had been thinking faded away. He just couldn't understand the way his own head was working.
Driver, stop!
Glint was suddenly frantic. Kelvin saw why. Long, copper-colored hair streaming behind her, Merlane was running to the coach. Glint got the door open. Glint and Merlane ran to each other as they got closer. Merlane opened her arms.
Driver, a little closer.
The chauffeur slipped the reins and the horses caught up to where the two young mind-talkers were hugging each other as though they had done so every day for the past 20 years.
Oh, Merlane.
Oh, Glint! Glint, I've waited for you for so long.
Long? Until Glow contacted her, she didn't even know of Glint's existence.
The two definitely were in need of a wedding. As were, Kelvin well knew, the two other mind talkers who had waited patiently for Glint's appearance. Charles was in the forest, alone at his private place, clinging to a tree trunk. His fingers felt as if they were touching Glow's. His mental lips were on her mental lips. His imagined body against hers.
Glow!
Oh, Charles! Charles! Now that my brother is here, we can marry!
He's meeting Merlain right now!
Yes, and she knows all about him.
We're all of us married, darling, starting now.
We were before, Charles, but now it's different. Now it's like your mother and father.
We'll have to tell them.
We'll tell them. They can announce it. We can tell them before Helba at the Twin Palaces. Nice. Romantic.
But they may want a wedding.
Do you think so? Your parents never had one.
No. Big royal affairs with lots of guests is in that other frame's customs, not in ours.
I'm so glad it's not in ours.
Me too. I wonder about Horace and Ember.
They're married.
I know. Should that too be announced?
Do you mean announced by dragons?
Right. Maybe they won't live here, but I hope they do. I'd miss Horace.
They could stay in the forest, couldn't they? And then when Ember gets homesick, Horace can carry her instantly to dragon territory with the opal.
Yes, I suspect that they can. He'd better keep it in his gizzard now that Zadie's back.
We can't be sure about Zadie. We never saw her, Charles.
No, but your brother Glint did. So we know where she's been these past years.
She let us go. Isn't that strange?
Very. What was Helba's explanation?
She didn't say. Charles, there's something else. Your father, at Helba's, he acted strange.
Strange how?
There was something. I'm not certain. I would like to have read his mind.
Do you think he could be under a spell?
Wouldn't Helba know about it?
It depends on the spell, but don't spells show? Besides, if Zadie got to Kelvin, Helba would tell us.
But why would she want to, Charles?
She used to do things just to be malignant. She would have killed my sister if Father hadn't stopped her. She would have killed all of us, I think.
But Kelvin is the hero. He's the one in the prophecy, Muvar's prophecy.
Yes, and he's never liked it. He never wanted it.
Yet he's the hero. Charles, could it be...
that perhaps Zadie changed him, or is changing him?
Could it, Charles?
I'm afraid it could, love. I'm afraid it could.
Kelvin was surprised that his own feet had brought him here. It was almost as though he were wearing the spanner boots again. Somehow, he had walked to this beautiful bend in the river concealed by fruiting bushes and flowering trees. It had rained, and the puddles were reflecting blue sky and treetops, and a face. A beautiful woman's face framed by long red hair that made a perfect setting for eyes so green and bright and all-compelling. He wanted to reach out for that woman and clasp her and hold her to him. She was there in the mud puddle, and then she was there in his arms, and there was everything and nothing at all that he could do about it. Such an experience as he was about to enjoy was going to cost him everything he owned and all he had accomplished, but none of that mattered. He stretched his lips to her pulsing red lips. They touched, and he tasted...
Fish! Dry, smelly fish!
Kelvin choked, sitting up in bed. A young girl, almost as beautiful as the one he had been dreaming of, stood at the side of his bed. It was really his bed, in his bedroom, in his cottage. Sunlight streamed through the window onto the impish face of his niece.
Good morning, Uncle. Aunt Helen said I should come in and wake you. She said you were going to sleep away the day. That's right, isn't it?
What's that behind your back, Kathy?
Behind my back? Why, nothing, Uncle. Nothing except my pretty little behind. You know what St. Helen says. Behind every pretty girl, there's a pretty...
Young lady, don't you lie to me. And don't get impudent either.
Kelvin spoke harshly to cover up his guilty thoughts about that very part of her anatomy. She was his young niece, after all.
Oh, Uncle, you're such a grouch.
Kathy John reached down beside the bed and lifted up a large, ugly, stiff trass with opened mouth. The fishodermist had mounted it to look as alive as possible.
That's very nice, Kathy, but what are you doing here?
Try as he might, Kelvin couldn't even remember last evening. After the wedding announcement ceremony at the Twin Palaces for Merlain, Charles, Glow, and Glint, they had all gone to the wine house to celebrate.
You said to show you when it was ready, remember?
Of course I remember.
Kelvin lied. Somehow, he hadn't used to be able to lie at all.
Well, Uncle Kelvin, you said bring it over and we'll take it around together.
Kathy put her shapely bottom into the nearest chair.
Don't you remember?
Oddly, he did, and yet it had been as though the little impromptu celebration was elsewhere. They had been celebrating the fish and his daughter's and son's marriages and... Kelvin sat up in bed. Everything was so mixed up, he hardly recalled anything in the order in which it had happened.
All right, Kathy, get out. I'll get dressed and meet you and Helen for breakfast. Take the fish with you.
Kathy impolitely stuck her tongue out, rose, and exited, fish under arm. Kelvin stared after her.
Did she wiggle her bottom provocatively as she went out, or did I imagine it? If she did, what is she doing? Trying to vamp her own uncle? If she didn't, why did I think I saw it?
For Kelvin, neither notion was acceptable. He thought it must have been a trick of the light. Kelvin tried to get his thoughts in order as he dressed. He still wasn't used to the nearly new body Helba had, in effect, made for him. He couldn't believe the young firmness, and with it, to his surprise, an increased overloading of a young man's maturing desires. Last night he had wanted a woman, and it hadn't been Helen. Unbelievingly, he recalled the circumstances.
Look at St. Helens, pot-bellied, wheezing as he reaches across his table. Imagine that attractive bar wench, Nellie, interested in this fat old phony, even wanting to marry him.
Kelvin!
Kelvin turned at the sharp reprimand, seeing Helen in her housewifely shape and knowing that she had seen him staring at the younger woman, unavoidably comparing her firm arms and legs and quite oversized bosom to his wife's.
Dear, I was just, listening to your father.
A lie, first thing. Helen knew as well as he that he never willingly listened to her father.
I can see that.
Jealous, Helen had never been. But then Kelvin had never given her an excuse. He gave Helen his full husbandly attention, clouded just a bit by the wine he had been drinking.
Sit down, dear. I'm certain you'll find this interesting.
I'm certain.
Helen pulled up a chair, her eyes daring Kelvin to stare into that abundant cleavage across the table from them. Kelvin focused on an irregular stain on the tablecloth and set his face in the "I'm really interested" expression. It was a pose he suspected all married men had to learn eventually to ensure their own lives and marriages. St. Helens talked on while Nellie appeared to give him all her attention. When she shifted her position, her blouse gaped wider and wider, and inevitably, Kelvin's attention wandered.
Kelvin, I think I'd like a glass of wine.
Huh? What? Oh, yes, yes.
Kelvin wrenched his eyes away from those enchanting depths.
I was just about to offer to go get you one.
Oh, I'll get it, Mrs. Hackleberry. That's what I get paid for.
And for making things pretty.
Oh, I had thought perhaps she got paid for something else.
It's a big tit. The customers like looking at them.
I'll be right back.
She's really very nice. When's your wedding announcement?
When I can't get out of it. Not that I want to, of course.
Then why hesitate?
Same reason I should have hesitated more often when I was younger. Marrying is committing.
More than adventure?
Kelvin was really astonished at the way his words were forming. They seemed to just well up, almost as though his tongue had a will of its own.
At least as much as going to war.
You'd hesitate over that now? You used to be all for it.
I used to be for glory. I was dumb.
You feel the prophecy will have to be fulfilled?
It was a strange thing to be asking under any circumstances, especially of St. Helens.
I expect. Only I don't feel as certain. Things are good now. The last war almost brought disaster.
Maybe the prophecy will reverse itself. The prophecy says what's to be accomplished, not how it's to be accomplished.
If you believe in prophecy, Kelvin, you don't.
I used to say I didn't. I was younger then.
Who's the enemy? Roderick or Thrud? Be sort of hard to fight a war without mercenaries, wouldn't it?
I think, maybe this is wrong, but it does make a bit of sense. It's not the remaining kingdom so much as something else. Zadie wanted to govern all the kingdoms. Suppose she comes back the way Helba insists she will. But suppose she's changed, so that ruling will be enough for her.
You mean you think she's reformed? How can you suggest that, Kelvin? She tried to destroy our daughter, you, and in fact all of us.
I admit it would be a great change, but so much has worked out so differently than we expected.
Nothing quite that different.
Nelly brought the wine and placed it before them. As she leaned over, pouring from a bottle, Kelvin had to admit to himself once again that the girl really did have nice jugs. But, finding Helm's eyes were glaring at him, he hastily gulped the fermented grape plum. The rest of the conversation drifted or floated by, and the next he knew, he was in bed at home, and Kathy, his niece, was waking him. There had been that dream, and that fish under his nose, and now he was nearly dressed.
Kelvin!
Kelvin finished pulling on his bullhide boots. He stood admiring his younger, handsomer self in the mirror, and strode out. Helen, disheveled, her hair hanging uncombed, worn house dress askew, eyes puffed almost as though from crying, was far from appetizing. Kelvin gulped, having hardly ever thought such a thing in their entire married life.
Well, sit down.
Kelvin felt strange, as though now intoxicated. The waffle cakes were burned, and the cough tea was of a darker and more bilious shade of green.
Just what happened last night?
Eat!
Definitely, he had transgressed in some fashion, and Helm was letting him know it.
Where's Kathy?
Kathy? How should I know? What are you talking about?
Kelvin opened his mouth to say that Kathy was here, then thought about it. He thought that she had been there with him, but possibly it was a dream.
Are you going to eat that or not?
Well, I'll try.
The waffle cake tasted like ashes drenched with rancid grease and then dipped into a sickeningly sweet syrup.
I'm not surprised. A man your age acting like that. And in public.
Kelvin decided to grasp the animal by the horn.
Just what did I do last night?
You don't remember?
Only that we were at the tavern with your father.
And his bovine girlfriend. You forgot that?
Kelvin strained his recollection, but nothing came. He shook his head.
You don't remember what you did that made even that hussy blush?
He pushed back the plate, determined not to eat. He must have made a fool of himself, but he honestly couldn't remember.
Where are you going?
To change my boots. Then I'm going for a walk. Alone.
He strode into the bedroom and went right to the closet. He opened the door, pushed back some clothes, and found them waiting. To all appearances, they were as fresh and new as the day he had first acquired them. Dragon leather boots to match the gauntlets on the shelf. To match, not only in appearance, but also in kind. He pulled off the bullhide boots and pulled on the dragon. They felt much better than other footwear he had worn. It was a delight just to feel his toes in them. He left the bedroom, ignored Helen's hurt look, and walked outside. Deliberately, Kelvin thought of the riverbank, held the thought, and stared.